Hello and welcome to the Heads and Volleys podcast with me, Lee Dunn.
This episode is a recording from the Getting to Know the Coach series by the San Francisco Elite Academy. I was interviewed by Chancellor Daniel, who is a coach on the girls' side of the club and has become a good friend of mine. So I hope you enjoy.
So where'd you grow up? How'd you start playing soccer, Lee Dunn?
I grew up in a real small town called Daventry, central England. There was actually a village about 15 minutes from my hometown with a big stone in the middle of it that was identified as the heart of England. So right in the middle of the country, and I grew up and I played on the street there. That's how I really got into it. Some of my first memories of playing were at school. We'd go to school. School started at 9:05 and I'd be in school at 8 a.m. playing on the blacktop with my friends. And we had like a cage that was built that we played soccer in every day. And then I would play on the street after school. There was a field that was kind of in between all of our houses, convenient. It was like a 2-minute walk. And so we'd all meet at, there were two full-size fields and there was always one goal that we played on that backed onto somebody's fence. So the ball would always bounce back. That lady hated us, but that was what we did. That was where we played. And that was really my first memories of it. And then getting into the game, my dad took me to our local club called Drayton Grange. And it just took off from there. It was everything I ever did.
Yeah. Were you always playing with like kids like of random ages, or was it like mostly kids around your age? Or
it was always a mix of within a couple of years when it was on the street. I mean, for the most part, it was our friends, and then it was a neighbor or a friend of a friend that would join us. So it's pretty much always the same age. And then as I got a little older, I remember playing with my cousin. And my cousin at the time, I remember him being like so old. He's probably 19 or 20 years old at the time. And we played this big outdoor game on the field. And I remember this grown guy taking a shot, and I tried to block it, and he hit me with the ball. And I had like it was a mitre ball, and I had mitre stamped on my leg for about 3 days in a bruise. And that was one of my first memories of playing with the big guys. And I cried, and I couldn't catch my breath because it stung so bad. And I remember going home and my dad was like, if you want to play with them, you got to deal with it. I was like, yeah, I'm going to deal with it. And then go back out and carry on playing and just go on from there. But that first shock, man, that really hurt playing with the big kids. That sucks.
So would you say that dovetails into the second question? Like what you're like, one of your favorite early soccer memories was it getting hit with the mitre ball?
I wouldn't say that was it. It definitely rings true though, but I just remember playing and having, I was in a discussion the other day on Twitter, and someone was talking about when you played as a kid or when you play, were you trying to impersonate someone or who were you impersonating? And for us, it was always whoever the hot shot of the moment was. So I remember when Tony Yeboah played for Leeds and he scored the barring in, and that was like the Yeboah goal. And then, so it was like, I'm going to be Yeboah today. And then we'll go and play. And you just imitate these people. I remember Beckham scoring the free kick against Greece to qualify for the, I think it was the Euros he qualified for, and Old Trafford. And everybody wanted to go out. And anytime there was a free kick, it's like, I'm going to be Beckham and I'm going to try and put this in the top corner like he did. And
the center of the goal up over the wall. And then,
yeah, that's it. Yeah. Yeah. And the crowd goes mental. And those are the memories for me of just playing carefree and then making up games that we played. We had all sorts of random games that we would make up that always included a football. And just that to me was what soccer was. That was what playing was. And then playing organized with my team, my dad never really said anything to me. And this is always interesting that he would always kind of ask me if I enjoyed it, but never really coached me, never really sat in the car afterwards and said, oh, you could have done this better, you could have done that better. And I always remember whenever I scored a goal, I'd look at him and he'd just put his thumb up. And so it was just like this little thing we had whenever we played. It was always just a little thumbs up. And even when after I left university and I was coaching in the summers, I'd go back home and I'd play. And I remember my dad coming to watch, and I was what, 20 years old at the time. And he came and watched and I scored and he looked at me and there was a thumbs up too. So that took me right back like 15 years from when I first started playing too. So those are the really cool memories that I have of, I mean, even sitting in a trash bag because I'm covered in mud after a game on a Sunday morning, like freezing cold. But there's just, yeah, those are the real good bits. I don't ever really remember trophies or winning games or winning leagues or anything like that. It was always the kind of things around what I was doing that always mattered the most.
So the thumbs up from your dad. Do you have like a thing like that you do with your players now?
I've actually kind of, you know, when you see like NBA players, or they all have like little handshakes and stuff. A lot of pro players do that now. I've started that with my players. So one of my players gets a thumbs up. The other one, I just pull a funny face out. Another one, I have like a secret handshake with, and I try and build that rapport with them for sure. That's something that definitely stuck with me. And I just remember I would never really look at my dad unless I scored and there was a thumbs up. And I never really liked to see some of my players kind of look for approval sometimes from their parents or from me as a coach. And I try and make whatever I have relationship wise with them is just about them and I, and not necessarily about their performance. That's always been a big takeaway for me, of kind of just building that relationship with them, that they're more than just a player. They are a person too.
Mm. That's cool. So why did you get into coaching? You said you were at university, you came back, you were doing some coaching and some playing. Like, what was it all about for you?
I was playing at university. We were training. I went to university in Sheffield, so Northern England. Unique place, beautiful place, but it would rain even with a clear blue sky, Northern England. And we played in the Northern League, so we would travel even further north to just below the Scottish border and play against universities up there. And it was cold and wet and grey most of the time. And I remember we were training one day and it was pouring rain, and the guy from a company that I worked for, Challenger Sports, came out and he said, "I'm not going to keep you long. If you're interested in coaching, think about coming to the US for the summer." And I was like, "Yeah, give me a card, whatever. I just want to go home and get warm." And my degree at university was in teaching. So I was working through physical education degree. And part of it was we were actually working through field games and invasion games. And so soccer was, of course, a big thing for us. But just learning like the skill of working with individuals and the tools that you can use for working with different people in different situations, and I guess like the pedagogy of coaching. So really understanding what it was to connect with individuals. And then I took up the opportunity to coach in the US for the summer, and I just loved it. I'd never been to America before. And then I got a contract that said you're going to Northern California, and I traveled all around the state coaching different weeks in different places. And I just loved it. So I went back and finished university and came out and made a run to do it full time because of the lifestyle, but also because the game was growing. I coached kids that were wearing summer dresses and jeans on soccer camp and had never kicked a ball in their life and had no idea how to kick a ball. And that to me was incredibly sobering, coming from a nation like England where everybody plays, even the kids who don't play know how to play. And these kids have just thought that there's so much potential to grow the game here that it captivated me, and I never wanted to leave.
Was this like mid-2000s?
This was 12 years ago. So 2008 was my first summer. Okay. Landed here the beginning of June, so a couple months now. And then I was here for 10 weeks and then went back home and then came back the following year for 6 months. So that was the start of it all 12 years ago.
Dang. Yeah. All right. You never did. Did you ever do any coaching like when you were a kid or like?
I did little bits when I was at university because my degree was in teaching. So I had to do all sorts of coaching. There's 5 aspects of the curriculum in the UK. So I had to teach swimming. I had to teach dance. I had to teach gymnastics. I had to teach field games, and I had to teach athletics. So I taught all of them within school settings as kind of part of our work experience and within the degree. And then I got into coaching a little bit, but not really all that much. It was all pretty much here in the US. And the big surprise for me was coaching really polite kids in the US on soccer camp and then going home to an inner city school in Sheffield and saying to a kid like, "Hey, you go and play left back." And he tells me what he thinks of me and says, "You go play left back." A kid of the same age that has just complete like, "I'm not playing left back. You go play left back." That was a surprise for me for sure.
That's really funny. What's it called? So, all right. That's really interesting. Before we get into like the like 5 or 6 questions, like about kind of like the idea of coaching, like, or what you're coaching like now, like existentially, just need to know, do you have any video highlights of your playing career?
You know what? I don't think I do.
Do you have any great pictures?
I have one of me playing at university. It was really, just one of me. It was like we had a varsity game every year against our local university rivals. And it was every sport from that both universities had, we played, and then every game result was tallied up, and then ultimately the winner of varsity won the most games. And there's a picture of me doing that then, but I don't really, I have some pictures of me as a kid, but very few. It's a shame. Mm-hmm. I wish my parents grew up with an iPhone, because I'm sure there'd be some
cool. No, it's like it's so prevalent now, and like all I have is I mean, I played so much soccer and like so much club soccer, but there were like a couple of guys that my high school hired to do like a end of the year video every year. And like those guys like carried the big camera like on the whatever. And some, and like we, so I have like a like an end of season video from all 4 years of high school or all whatever varsity years of high school. And you look back on them and they're so much fun to look at. You know, like I'm like, dang, dude, these kids have stuff from when they're like 5 and 8, and you know, you can see like so much growth, even in the stuff we're doing now.
Yeah,
like, I give them the little challenges, and like you can see the growth over the course of the last couple of months. Just, you know,
connecting with my players on Instagram has been really cool, because I've set them, especially with this situation right now, they have skill challenges and ball work every day that they work on, and a lot of it is their own individually led kind of training that they do, so based on their position. And the idea is that it gives them the creativity to go and decide how they're going to get better, instead of me saying you need to do this, you need to do that. And I'm telling them to film it and send it to me, and they're putting it on their Instagrams, and they're putting it wherever they want on social media. And the idea is just like that, you build almost this resume, but you also have these memories and this look back of what you've done. And for them to have their phone available and just prop it against a wall and go play, like, oh, this, it's so good. It's so good. I'm so jealous. I wish I had that.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Like your parent, like, was an absolute like maniac if they showed up with a video camera.
I know. Yeah.
Babies in America, they're like,
because we film our game. So we use the video camera, and so they all have access to it. And part of our kind of webinar stuff that we've been working on is picking out moments from the games relative to their positions and things they're doing well that they can kind of take and hone. And I asked them, what's it like watching yourself play? And some of them say it's weird, or they always look for the bad things, as most people do, I think, but really helping them understand the value in actually seeing themselves play, and then seeing other people play in their positions within the same game, if they've been subbed out or if they've been playing in a different position. They see so much more. And I think about being a kid, you would imitate a player, you would watch them on TV or listen to them on the radio. You never got to see yourself play. So they have such an advantage now.
Yeah, that's great. And you're talking about like 12, 13, 14 year olds, basically?
Yeah. 12 through 14s, yeah.
Yeah, it's like such a cool age to like see yourself doing things and have the capacity to like really improve, you know, like really change who you are as a player.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
So it's like a few years on, you kind of are what you are.
Right? Yeah. That's it. Yeah. This is the golden age for them right now. Yeah. So just embracing it.
That's cool. So that's perfect. Like, so the next question being like, so what does thriving look like as a player, as a team? You know, what do you see? How do you describe like a player or a team who's thriving? Or what are the signifiers that you notice?
I think that I don't really know how to explain it, but you feel it. Like you feel the players coming to you and they're excited, or they've got something to say, and it's not just that was good or practice was good or I did good. It's more than that. There's like an ownership, a belonging. There's it's definitely a feeling. So I've been on the sides, both sides of this, where I feel I've had a thriving environment, and I look at even just the webinars I have with the boys right now, they're all coming together. There's like an excitement. It's like they've walked into a room with all their friends. And I think that when they're all trying to outdo each other and they're all trying to copy or match or just be better in some way, whether it's a faster time or it's more juggles or it's look at what I did, look at what I did here. And that to me is thriving, that they have this drive in themselves, the environment, whether that's the players, the coach, the team, that's pushing them to want to be better. And I think that's really what thriving is, for them to drive themselves to be better and kind of be proud and be able to show that off. And I think often kids can be controlled a little bit in that, you know, you don't show off. That's not a polite thing to do. But really in my environment, trying to encourage them to show off and say, be proud of what they're doing. This is what I'm doing. They're thriving in that environment because it's providing that space for them to excel and to go and challenge themselves. And then I think pulls along everybody else because they see that somebody else is doing it and it's socially accepted that it's good to be good and it's good to be the best. And so I want to be like that. You know, I want to keep up with that. So it's not me pushing people saying, why haven't you done this? Why haven't you done that? It's look at what Chance has done over there. That's the marker for you to follow up with now. And so they started to, it's difficult with the players I have because they don't really understand consequences, I don't think. And so they don't understand that if they don't work hard right now, or if they don't keep up their work right now, then that may have an effect when they get back on the field in a month or 2 months or whatever that looks like for us. They don't really understand that. They just think that they'll just go play and it'll be okay again. And then they'll get on the field and they'll be surrounded by players who have probably tried and continue to work hard. And they may find themselves getting left behind, and the knock-on effect of them not being the best in the environment can be negative. And so I think using the environment to prop up the really positive, I guess, leaders and kind of examples, and using that as the model for everybody to try and keep up and follow with, I think is really valuable for them to see that they may not understand the consequences, but there is a significant value in them continuing to push and continuing to challenge themselves.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I think we talk a lot on the girl side, at least like in that like middle age group, like 09s through kind of 04s or whatever. It's just like, it's okay to be good. You know that, right? Like, it's all right to be great. Like, it's fine. I won't be mad at you if you score a goal. Like, you know, and like, I think sometimes with girls, there's a little bit more of that hesitancy, right?
Sure.
But I think the way that you describe like your players pushing each other, I think that's the way that I think of thriving, right? Like they're interested, they're excited, they're pushing it, they're driving it, you know?
I think it's so valuable right now too, because everybody's separated. So it's really on them to be the best that they can be, or to be challenged or challenging themselves. And yeah, if they can then post something in our group text message and say, look, one of my players got 2,600 juggles the other day, 2,600. I got 491. And then, so I'm like, who wants to beat that? And they're all like, oh, I'll never beat that. But sure enough, juggling records are going up, and you say what you want about juggling, but it's one way that the players are still working and they're still achieving and still having an element of success. So I'm all for it right now.
Honestly, like implementing a, like an age group juggling tracker, like I did a spreadsheet with all their names in it, like last year during like our intro meetings, like in the spring. It's like, all right, here's a juggling tracker. Everybody put your juggling record down. I put them all on a sheet, and now everybody can see everything. You can go look at it anytime. And I go, the top three players on any given team, like on my two blue teams, 08 and 09, you're the captains of the team, right? You want to be the captain? Be the best juggler. Right. And they all go back and they look at that, and like, it changes all the time. And like, I think it just like gives them something that they could do on their own that they can like actually like quantify. Right. Yeah. Like, soccer is such an unquantifiable game. Like you said, it's just like a feeling, you know?
Yeah.
And like, the kids will always surprise you with what they're capable of.
Yeah, they really will. You have to empower them. And I think the more we do that, the more value we see, the more growth we see in them.
Mm-hmm. It's like every great soccer player you've ever known is like somebody who did something that nobody else had ever done before.
Right.
So like, how could you be taught to do something that nobody else has ever done before? Like, you have to just be like empowered, right? To become to become Pele, to become Ronaldinho or whatever, right? So there's all these different kinds of players. How do you think children learn? Do you think that it's like from each other? Is there like a specific way? Do you go through, with all the teaching stuff that you've done, I'm sure you have like a really interesting perspective.
They're all my experience. And I think it's not going to be groundbreaking, but they're all different. And so one of the biggest challenges for a coach or for a teacher is to learn how each player ticks. So I coach two teams, you coach two teams. We have up to 30 players potentially that we have to get to know. You have to become familiar with everything about them, or as much about them as possible. And that includes knowing how they learn. And so I have players, if I stop a practice and talk a moment, that they are instantly disinterested. And so I have to know that they are not the kind of command style learners. But if I get the tactics board out and I put it out and I say, here is our whatever significant moment in the game. Here's a trend that we're facing. So tell me what you see. And I have a handful of players that will instantly grab the board and start playing with it. And then I have instantly a few players that will speak up if they see things. And so I begin to kind of break the team up into the players that I know need different things. And so I can approach certain players and say, show me on the board what you are doing here, what you think about this, what you think about that. Or I can give them moments from the game because they are visual learners and they can see that they need to, or they like to watch themselves, or it makes more sense when they see it live. Like what, think so about why you went there.
Hold on 1 second. My terrible internet connection, you went dead for a second after you said you brought out the board.
So if I bring out the board, I have some individuals that are interested in using the board because it's something that they can maybe get their hands on, something they can see and manipulate. So they're interested in that. Then I have players who will just give me an answer verbally if I ask the question. So really beginning to understand what the players need and how they are going to react by my coaching. So knowing that some will like a printout, some will like the board, some will like to be asked a question, some will like to just show me. So really understanding across my 30 players what they need and then how I engage with each one. So in the group, I try and I talk about this a lot with my podcast and with my blog, where I try and create the training session ahead of time to an extent that I can share it with the players. And I can say to them, here is the session. Here it is. I use a tactical pad, which is like an animated GIF, too, the same thing. So the GIF moves the dots around and the ball moves around, and you can kind of see the sequence of play. And there are varied opinions on that. People think players should just learn as they go, and other people like the idea. And I really like the idea because if they are learning the task, they're not necessarily learning the soccer skills that are required. And I don't really change up practices too much anyway, but to me, in terms of learning, they've already learned what the practice is. They've already learned kind of the rules of it. They've already learned how to be successful in it or what the objectives are. So now I can go into that environment and focus on the individual as opposed to trying to deliver this mm-hmm. overall practice in 5 different languages where they're seeing it, they're hearing it, they're looking at it, all of these different ways of working with these kids. So I can say to Chance, who is a visual learner, and I can have him on the side with me, and I say, look at the way the ball has done this. Look at the way the ball has done that. What do you see here? What do you see there? And then I can see another player and say, why did you do that? Who is a very logical thinker. Why did you do that? Why do we want it here? Why do we want it there? So I can challenge each individual on their level. I think that's probably one of the biggest takeaways I could give anyone really in terms of coaching, of set the environment up to be as successful as possible for the game to play and then work with the individuals. But you've got to know how those individuals like to learn. So how do children learn? They learn in all sorts of different ways. And that's, I think, part of your skill of finding that way to get onto their language and to their level.
That's a really unique perspective. And I know exactly what you're saying about people like, I think it's just like more so now. I think we went through this like phase, maybe in American soccer or whatever, where you were like, okay, we really need to like plan out the practice beforehand. And we need to like show them like how things work and like go through these, like we need to like go through these specific rotations. We need to do positional play. We need to work through all of this set play stuff. And then you kind of lost some of that like creativity and freedom, yeah. Right? And like it cut out certain learners, or like, you know, it's like kind of stifled kids a little bit, right? And so now we're just like trying to be more cognizant of the fact like, oh man, like we had Landon Donovan and DeMarcus Beasley 20 years ago. And like, oh, we kind of haven't had, you know, all those players kind of since like are the ones that like jumped overseas and then exploded.
Yeah. Oh, right? For sure. Yeah. Yeah.
What's your like perspective on the like pushback or like questioning you get, like when you post things like on the internet, like as a coach?
To be honest, it's actually a really, it's a really positive environment. So if someone doesn't like it, typically they'll just ignore it. And so, or if someone has a genuine interest or an opposition to it, and they are, and most people I found are genuine, they will ask you the question and they'll say, why have you done this? Or why have you done that? Or they'll take it and say, I would do this or I would do that. And
yeah,
the feedback has always been really positive. And I think that's one of my biggest takeaways in using like social media for connecting with coaches, and Twitter is that main source really, because people are genuinely interested in being better or taking ideas. And most people will look at something and it's all selfish. So they'll look at it and say, how do I use this for me? How will my players react to this? Not, this guy's an idiot, he doesn't know what he's talking about. It's always based on their own opinion in their own environment. And that was something that I took away. And so a lot of the stuff I will post or will share will always incorporate an element of, what do you do? How would you do this? And kind of invite that discussion that there's no right or wrong answer. If there was a right or wrong answer in soccer, we would all be doing it by now, hopefully.
Right.
Maybe
right.
We have the wrong answer, and that's why everyone's doing something completely different.
Yeah. But
the idea of most coaches are really open and engaging and really happy to share their opinion or to challenge you on yours, which is a really positive environment.
I think it's like, I'm on Twitter like for, I think, you know, I was never going to find like a group of Arsenal fans, like, wherever, you know, like tons of them where I lived. Right. So like I kind of got on Twitter more to like engage with the rest of the world and like see these stories, learn about these people, like da 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 da. And, you know, sometimes the internet can be that like toxic community,
yeah.
But I really do see that kind of like in coaching in particular, there's a few jerks that are just like, oh, why would you do that? Like, this is how you do it. And when you like go back to it, like when you like search them a little bit, it always seems like it's because they want to like sell a thing that yeah. They're doing. Right. But like, I think that, I personally like coaching at Elite because there's so many other people, there's so many other coaches that like work so hard and like so many like nuanced perspectives, like in the way they do things. Like, I feel like I genuinely like get to learn all the time. Right. And like, I really take it to heart and I can like really think about it when like Bobby says like, why'd you do that thing this way? Or, like, you know, what have you tried it this way? Or, you know, like you guys all like have so many, like so much knowledge that it makes it fun, right? Because you could just coach for any club X and make the same amount of money.
Yeah, sure, right? Yeah.
But like the competitiveness that I have and like wanting to be better myself and like wanting to have good teams, you know, like I think it's like a good environment for that. It's cool that you found that or like created that on the internet.
And the good thing about social media too is you pick who you follow. And that, I mean, you can't stop who follows you necessarily, unless you go private and block people and such, but you can create your own environment. So if you are into soccer, then you just build a feed of soccer. If you're into astrology, then you've build a feed of astrology. And I say astrology because my wife's on Twitter for astrology. So she always tells me about it. Like we use the same platform and have a completely different experience on it. That's it's amazing to me. So you build an environment in which you want to, in which you want to thrive, you far away with it. And a lot of people are silent on there too. So a lot of people will just consume and enjoy whatever content you put out, whether that's videos or discussions. And there are a lot of people who will just observe or send a random message to me every now and then, or a little retweet or what have you. But most people are out there to just be better in themselves and be better for their environment. So it's, to me, it's a really positive space.
Yeah, I feel you. I feel like you kind of already answered it like in what you were talking, but like why is it important for children to lead the way?
Yeah, they've got to, I want them to make their decisions. And that's really hard to let go, I think, for a lot of coaches. I always hear about arguments of like coach-centered and player-centered, and that's not necessarily about children leading, but they are in a way leading their way through an environment that you've set up, whether that's a 3v3 or a 5v5 or even an 11v11. They are leading their way through. If you're making it as player-centered as possible, you are challenging them to lead the way. You're challenging them to find their own solutions. And we have, I have a game model for my team that falls within the greater game model of Elite. And part of that creation, I have my own style of play that I really like, and I really like certain aspects of a game. But I pull my players together and I say, what do you think, or what do you think we should be doing when we have the ball in this area of the field, when we've just lost the ball? And so we go through all four moments of the game and all three thirds, all of the thirds of the field, and they will add their comments. So they are already leading in that regard. So talking about kind of preparing them, we get out on the field and they already know, if I say this practice is in the attacking third, they know what the defenders are looking to do in that defensive third. They know what the attackers are looking to do in that attacking third, and they know what the transition moments look like. Could they repeat them? They could probably repeat one or two points from each one, and they're still learning that. But those are points that they decided along with my kind of gentle persuasion, if you like, to suit my style as much as theirs. But I'm encouraging them to become leaders in their own environment by challenging and leading, and by saying, coach, we think in this moment we have speed, so we should be playing like this. Perfect. Let's give it a go. Let's go for it, because this is their journey. And one of the biggest things I've learned is that this team isn't going to go to college. This team isn't going to go to the pros, but a player or even all of the players may go, but they don't go together. So it's about the individuals. So how do they lead A, themselves, and then how do they lead the team by being the best and being the best teammate that they can be? But it starts with them intrinsically, because they are the ones that have an IDP, and most of them have a desire to try and play college and beyond. So now I have what I say is like the hook on them. So you've written down on this individual development plan that we talked about that you want to go to college, you want to go and play pro, you want to go and play in Mexico, you want to go and play in Europe, whatever it is. So now that's down, that's truth. So we've got to work on that. And they become their own leaders in that regard. And that just filters into all of the environment.
Do you, like, as somebody who came here from a different country, do you think the other sports that are huge here, like them being like so coach driven or like top down kind of directed, do you find that like, does that ever like make it difficult for you to get kids to lead the way? Or do you think it's like,
I think maybe the elite environment we have is a little different, I think, than many clubs that I've been at, where there's been an expectation, and most of the kids are multi-sport athletes that I've coached before. And a few of mine are now, but they're pretty much serious soccer players. And so the players that I've had from multi-sport backgrounds have been not difficult, but they've been unsure, especially for a long time. And their parents, especially too, have like, you're the coach, we're paying you. Why is he deciding what the team is doing in this moment of the field? Or why is he kind of being challenged with playing this game with no quote unquote instruction from you? And so seeing this, it's really fun having a different style of coaching and allowing players to thrive in different ways and being player centered, and it's a complete contrast to the typical screaming and shouting and whistle blowing and play by play instruction that you see in a lot of other sports. Mm-hmm. That I really, really try and share that with anybody who will listen in terms of my team and my environment, that's not who I am. And that's not what I think is valuable for your player. It doesn't mean that it doesn't work, or, you know, parents will always say, oh, he needs a good screaming at every now and then. It's like, well, you scream at him, because I'm not screaming at him. That's not going to do anything for him. I'm not interested in that. Thank you very much. Yeah. But it can be difficult, because it's a complete contrast. You know, that this guy is now standing and watching, and is weird because he empowers my player.
Yeah. I think you said it earlier, like the idea of like just like being an environment setter and like, okay, we're trying to get into this, we're in this area of the field. What are our strengths? What are our weaknesses? What are the opportunities? How are you reading the situation? Yeah. Like, go.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? And then, like, once you've done it, like, okay, how do I like talk you through it? How do I like make you question what you did, or like validate what you did, even, right?
It's, yeah.
so hard. Like sometimes, especially with like a younger team that's like just still learning, right? You know, like the 10s, 11s, 12s that are getting there, right? Like they're starting to understand the game. They're starting to play the game. And then like kind of like letting them go through this process of doing things that you're like, ah, that's not my favorite way to play. But like, that's not what I always want to see. Or I don't think that's always going to work. But like, I got to let you experience it so that you know that it won't work. Or maybe you surprise me, right?
How is that then with working with girls in terms of the kind of male sport is a loud screaming coach typically in some of the typical sports. So is that something that is also comes across from girls sports too? Are they looking for that same sort of behavior from the coach or is it a little different?
So anytime anybody asks me, like I've coached, I started coaching with like boys and girls, right? Both. But I primarily coached boys in Southern California and it was like a high level club. And these are kids that were trying to go D1 and trying to play for real. And like, it was an intense environment. Right. And then I started coaching girls a little bit more and like kind of got the difference. And so like through that experience, I've kind of like developed this like anecdote or like anybody asked me to say like, look, if I have a group of kids at halftime and it's a group of boys and I say, all right, guys, we need to do this thing better. Every single boy is like, there's no way he's talking about me, right? Like, I'm, you know, but like, if I say that same thing to girls, every girl's like, oh man, it must be me. Like, right. So like, I think they have this, like, they want to please you. They want to like, they like are empathetic to everybody around them, like whether or not they should be sometimes. And I think it's a good, I think it's like, I don't think it's a bad quality. I just think it's a quality, right?
Yeah, sure.
But the difference being is like, sometimes they want answers. They're like, what do I do in this situation? And I'm like, well, there was a lot of factors in that situation if we recreate it. Like, where were you on the field? Who was it around you? What, like how much time did you have on the ball or not? What was the score in the game? Like, you know, like there's so many factors that I try to make them realize, like, yo, like you kind of got to read the situation on your own. Like I can't, there's no answer. Like it's the classic law school answer. Like it depends. Right. It depends. Right. You go get a lawyer, you know, and they like, you ask them this question and you want a cut and dry answer. And they're always like,
no chance.
It depends. Right.
So let me preface this question then with a conversation I had with a friend of mine who coached high level girls for a little while. And he said that they would do the same thing over and over again. And that came from his training environment. So for example, playing out the back, they would play the same way every single time, because that was a way that he showed them as an example. And then that was the cut and dry answer. That was the answer. That's how you do it. So mm-hmm. How do you set up your environment to hopefully maybe avoid that? Or is that something that you've experienced? And what do you do to prevent that as much as possible?
Oh man, it's like you said, looking at video, right? So like, for example, playing out of the back, you know, you start at like a young age and you go, okay, the goalkeeper is going to start with the ball in the six on a goal kick and play it, you know, essentially horizontally, right? One way horizontally, or they're going to hit it as vertically long as they possibly can. Right. And so like when you play horizontally, the first touch goes a specific way and they always look for that same pass. And then you go back and you look at the game on video and you go, okay, well, how many times did it take you playing that same pass for the other team to recognize that you were going to play that pass and get in the way? And then what stops you from making a different decision? Right. Like, how are you not seeing this? So I kind of set up just like one pass, and then from one pass, like what each option is.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Did you watch, are you watching any of the Last Dance?
No, I keep seeing it, but I need to get into it. I need to start it.
So Tex Winter is this, he's this like basketball savant, basketball genius, this whatever. And NBA, especially like in terms of basketball, can be very one-on-one. And like, he was the first guy to like, develop this like triangle offense where the ball goes into one place and then there are like options, right?
Okay.
And the ball moves into a spot. There's a triangle somewhere. And each ball movement like creates a a rotation of some sort, right? And so like Michael Jordan, the best one-on-one player in basketball history to that point, bought into this system, and it allowed him to like be able to like use his teammates, because if he would just try to go it alone, you know, teams could collapse on him. And they came up with the Jordan rules, and they could just like, oh cool, if he comes into this space, we'll just give him one of those, right? And then like he's like, oh, if I go into this space and they've collapsed on me, I know that I have that pass there, right? And know that this thing exists. So I think just like, you know, soccer so much is like triangles and diamonds.
Yeah.
We're always talking about like rondos, and like we always start kind of with this like technical square where you get in the middle of like a 4v1 and the ball goes into you and you have options to play it each different direction. And then you play a 4v1 or a 4v2. And then we go back. And then in the game, we like screenshot or like highlight, okay, here's the whole field. Okay, well, here's this area. In this area, here's your 4v2. So which one is the split? Which one is the safe? Which one is the safe side pass? Well, you know, where do you need to move if you're going to get it? And like just relate it to that like simple idea, right?
It's good translation, and it's real too. So they see it for real. Because I remember a game a couple seasons ago where one of their players had a ball, and the coach was like, "It's just like your rondo. It's just like your rondo." And then almost out of nowhere, like players turned into a 4v1, and they pretty much played a 4v1 around us, but they didn't go anywhere. They didn't go anywhere with the ball. And so it was, they made like 3 or 4 passes, like, now we've got to break out. Now we've got to break out. So I don't know if he does that as well in his practices. Maybe, hopefully he saw that and was like, okay, now we need some sort of progression out of this. But yeah, it's so true that if you can use that content like that and show them, here it is in the game, here it is in that moment, now you see some relative kind of learning, right? We're taking it away and actually putting it in the game.
Right. And then you go to that, like, I don't know if you did this in your teaching stuff, but like, I'm always like, I always go back to this analogy of tag. I'm like, look, if you're playing tag and the ball came to you from there, are you going to get it and run there with it again? Or are you going to get it and go? Like what were you, but like so many times you take your touch like into pressure, right?
Yeah.
So you have that rondo and it's like, okay, now I've gotten into space where I can open up and get away, right? My teammates created this opportunity for me to leave and not get tagged, you know. It's just like you start to like employ a little bit of logic. Mm-hmm. Right. I think girls especially really enjoy that, because like, oh, I can think through this, great.
Yeah
So like, what do you think it means to embrace the struggle?
Oh boy, I just did a presentation for America Scores on this, in terms of redefining success. There's, I guess, many facets to it, but really, I guess, it started with the idea that not every team can win. So that's immediately a struggle when most people are playing to win. So the environments that most clubs have or most teams have, it's all about winning. And given that only one team can win, whether that's a league or a tournament or even in the game, most of us are already setting up for failure. So then how do we embrace that, whether that is from a simple level of applauding your opponent that they've beaten you and they played well, to then setting up yourselves with a game model, with individual development plans, so that regardless, go back to what I said about the individual is the one who goes to the professional and not the whole team. So is this individual working through their individual development plan, and are they on track? Now we're able to embrace the struggle as a team, because each individual may or may not be having success. So then it becomes about the individual more than it does about the team. And then moving into the team environment, setting our own standards and our own goals for games. And I've won plenty of games in the second half, 1-0, or tied 0-0 in the second half after probably being blown out in the first half in some of my early coaching days. So really learning to, I guess, embrace it in a way that is not, yeah, we lost, oh well, like, well, we're still having fun. But if we're not, if we're not leaving a game or a situation with anything to take away, then we failed, whether we won or not. And so each player has their own goals and the team has goals too. So if we've been working on playing out of the back as a consistent example, and we're looking at bouncing off the six in a certain way. Did we do that in the game? We did it and we failed a couple of times, or we did well a couple of times. Now we have some measure of success that says we tried to do what we've been doing in practice. Did it work? Did it not work? And then how does that take us into the next game? So the struggle was that we are actually working at what we've been practicing. So it's relative. And now we have some consistency. So the test was in the game. And there's no mention of the result. And some of the feedback I've had when presenting this idea of redefining success is that people will say, well, you know, you want to win. Kids will be disinterested if they're not going to win. And again, only one team can win. So maybe that'll be your team if you do all of these steps and take all of these steps on. I think that you are going to embrace the struggle in a way that's going to help you develop, whether that's as an individual or as a team. And not every team's going to win. So how can you have individual winners within your environment as much as possible?
Yeah, yeah. That tie-in to your bigger goals, to your IDP or whatever, right? You're like, okay, you want to go play pro? You want to go play college? Like, well, it's not going to be like, we're not taking this team to your college.
Exactly, yeah. Like, yeah, how good are you based on your goals, based on your individual level? And I did a podcast interview with Dan Abrahams, a sports psychologist, and he talked about a high-performance mindset. And the idea of measuring yourself every time you play the game, every time you practice, do you have high performance mindset? And high performance mindset says, I am giving my best. I'm giving a 10 out of 10. I am being the best that I can be. Even if the stats say that you gave the ball away every single time you got it and you scored 5 own goals, if you can walk off the field and say, I did everything I could do, and today just wasn't my day, you have a high performance mindset. And that's going to set you up better in the long run than saying, I need to connect 20 passes today. I need to score 5 goals today. I need to put 4 crosses in.
Yes. Yeah. So true.
Yeah.
Embracing that struggle. Like how, like, this is going to take a while, right? Yeah. I love the idea of like soccer as like a lifestyle, you know, like versus like just like an activity.
Yeah.
Right. And when you're coaching a team, like, especially like at your age on the boys' side, like in San Francisco, like, nothing against other clubs, right? But like some of them, like that's going to be their top level, like, and they treat it that way. So they're just trying to get out of there with like, they're just trying to get out of there with a scoreboard win.
Yeah.
And it's so hard to like express that, like, actually, you know what? Like my group is like working towards like something like far kind of in the future. They're not leaving the game.
No.
Just because we lost in the scoreboard. They were working on doing X, Y, and Z today. You know, ultimately, it's hard to explain to people like who didn't grow up in a soccer culture that like that's it, right? You know, like I don't know.
And if I kind of process this right now, I don't have anything to prove. I'm not trying to flaunt state championships, and whilst I would love to win a state cup or win the league or win a trophy or what have you, that's always a reward for hard work, I think. And for, if anything, probably in a tournament, slogging out 4 games better than your opponents did. But
yeah.
If I'm really processing it, I think that I've already won. I grew up playing on the street. I grew up wanting to become a pro, and I played a very short stint of semi-pro after college. And all I ever really cared about was soccer. And all I ever really wanted to do was be involved in the game, I thought, as a player. But now I'm coaching, and it's my full-time job, and it's my livelihood, and it's my social presence. It's everything that I do. So I've already won if I really think about it. So I don't need to, I don't have to prove myself by winning whatever it is that turns everything into a coach-centered environment about needing to win or needing to beat our rivals across the city or anything like that. So I think with that mindset, I'm able to challenge the players and, like you said, set them up to go for the next step. It's not, this isn't it right now. I mean, we're going to have some fun. We're going to have a good time. And I promise you, well, I hope that you'll look back and say, Coach Lee was the best coach I ever had because he was the one who really cared about me. And that is just a stepping stone in their soccer career. And I think once you understand and appreciate that, then I think your players really can flourish and excel.
Right. Like, I get players, sometimes I'm like with players, I'm like, look, I'm not trying to be the best 9v9 team. Like, what does that even mean? You know, like, Just celebrate your U12 championship for your whole life.
I know. And it's a great accolade. Don't get me wrong. I want to win all that stuff too, but there's more required than that for these
players. Right, right. Like if we're skipping over, you know, if you're skipping over the hard part of like learning to play through your six, right? Like learning to do this thing. If you're skipping over that hard part to like bang it long to that kid who can kick the ball into an area of the goal where every goalkeeper is too short to reach it while you're 10 years old, then like, you know, you're missing, like, missing the process. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, so I think I feel like I know where you're going to go with this, but I'm really interested to hear you describe like how you try to lead your team from the sideline.
I get to stand and watch. I get to challenge them. Yeah, exactly. I
do it.
Challenge them on, well, there are times where I'll be more vocal, and often that'll be if I'm playing against a really vocal coach. And I think it can be off-putting for my players when they hear someone chirping all the time. And I mean, I'll often talk to that other coach more than I talk to my players and tell them to be quiet. But like the idea of really just, we've done all of the hard work. The players have done all the hard work during the week in our environment. They know what's expected of them. We set goals for the game. And so we say, we're going to try and achieve this. We're going to try and work through this. And the third goal is something that they will always decide, and typically always involves scoring goals or putting the ball in the top bins is a good one. So trying to figure out how we get that into our game plan and then go. So it's the test from our training of the week during the week. So there's a prep for the following week, and it's just another part of our cycle of training. So really helping them understand that we want to win, and we go to win, but we go to play in our way that will hopefully help us win, and we'll come out of it stronger.
Yeah. It's like, I try to think of like, and similarly to you, like I want to do a lot of the work during the week. Mm-hmm. Right. And like, I want them to have their game. And I'm always like, whenever you get up against the coach that's just like joysticking the entire game, and you're just like, dude, did you teach them anything this week? Like, are you going to let them play? Like, you know what I mean? But like at the same time, right, you have to give them, I at least try to give them like what they need on the day, right? So like sometimes with like a group of like younger kids, maybe it's early, maybe they're far away, maybe they're playing at somebody they like, you know, struggled against in the past, and they need a little bit of energy. They need a little bit of reassurance, right? They need you to like give them a few claps now and again. They need you to do this, right? They need you to like, come on, you know, a little bit of like support.
Here we go. Yeah. Yeah.
But like ideally, right? You're just like, oh, this is my team, right? I make a few changes here and there. I talk to the kids on the bench, blah, blah, blah. I go banter with the other coach. Like those are my favorite games, right? Even if another coach is kicking my butt, like those are my favorite games when the coach, like I can talk with the coach of the other team more than like with my team, right?
Because it's really rare too, especially unfortunately the level that my 06s, 2006 boys have played, it's typically been within San Francisco, and it's been against the quote unquote rivals of San Francisco. And so there's just so much animosity typically them aimed at us. Everybody wants to beat us, which is a good thing, and it's kind of a tool for us to use. That hey, if they're going to beat us, they're going to do it the ugly way, because we're going to play as good as we can, and we're going to do what we stay true to ourselves. And that's a really tough environment anyway, because the players are playing against friends, or they're playing against school teammates, and finding that rivalry is tough, where it's a week in week out rivalry of playing against someone they know or a former coach they played for, and that can often lead to negative environments, which can be tough. And I've got film on my VO of another coach swearing at me and stuff because I'm telling them to be quiet, and the parents are all rowdy, like, whatever, man, get out of here. But so same thing, like I'm regardless of whatever happens in the game, I'm never really shouting to command a certain pass or a certain way of doing things. It's always just little reminders, or it's always little kind of just helpful words. We have a common language in the team of probably about 10 words that we use consistently, and those same words always mean the same thing. So we know what predictable means when a player wins the ball. We know how we behave as a team when that comes out. So players will start saying it, so I don't have to, and they start taking their own lead in that environment too, because if I'm the six and the ball is, we just lost the ball from the nine, now the six needs the game to be as predictable as possible. So they're not completely outplayed too. So they're encouraging the eight or the 10 to press in the right way. And they just start becoming accountable for each other on the field, which I think is really, really valuable. And just allows me to focus on the other coach and wind him up a little bit more, you know?
Right.
Part of our online training the last couple of weeks has been exploring a lot around the game and around the experience for the players. And so we had a conversation, and part of the homework was to create a list of will and will not talk about before or after a game. And kind of the explanation that they gave was really interesting. So they don't like talking about bad things. Of course, they like talking about good things. And most of them are happy to talk about the bad things if their parents know what they're talking about. And I thought that was really interesting, really empowering for the players to say that, because they say, for example, playing at the back, playing through the keeper, recycling possession as much as possible, and we make mistakes, we lose the ball, we give away silly goals. And some of the parents are like, what are you doing? Like, don't do that, get it out, get it out. And that's part of my education process with them. But then the player is saying, it's a stupid conversation that they try and have with me about why we do things this way, because they don't understand. So then my challenge back to them has always been, well, did you tell them? They're like, no. So when you get in the car after practice and they say, how was practice? And you say, good. And that's end of conversation. Like, did you have fun? Yeah. And that's end of conversation. What do you expect? So part of, and then I had a parent webinar too. And part of that conversation with them was ask your player what they did in a certain moment. So I gave them, so all the parents have access to our game model as well. So they see what we are trying to do in all of the thirds and all of the moments. And then, so now they are more clued in. And then that's a conversation that they can have with their player. There's a structured conversation and not just a crazy kind of, did you have practice? Yeah, it was good. Yeah, it was all right. Yeah. And then get to the game. It's completely different expectations. So that was a real big thing that I've done this last couple of weeks.
That's an unbelievable amount of work that you've done on the back end to really like make that conversation good.
Because yeah.
I think sometimes it's easier just to be like, yo, leave your kid alone. Or like,
I love to watch you play is a nice line, but it's kind of boneless if they don't understand what's going on, because they just get frustrated.
I'll wrap up this question and answer with a huge thank you to Chance for posing those questions to me, but then also having that discussion with me and kind of sharing his opinion and his experience too. But then also thanks to SF Elite Academy for setting this up to share my story and all of the coaches' stories with our coaches. So you can check them out at SF Elite Academy. And then you can also follow me always at Lee Dunn Soccer. And if you would like to talk with me a little bit more on some of the ideas I've presented here or some of my thoughts, then connect with me, let me know. I would love to share more with you. More is always coming from Heads and Volleys, and look out for that real soon on all of the platforms, all of the places that you get all of your Lee Dunn Soccer material from.